There it is. I wonder if Tom E. Curran likes his intro music. I'm going to ask him. Hey, Tom. It's you're on with me and Andy Hart because the big fellow's got a tummy ache.
No.
Yeah, I know. You should send him your thoughts and prayers. Can you tweet to him thoughts and prayers? Hopefully he gets back.
I'll consider it.
Do you like your open music? Would you like us to change it? Would you like a country song by any chance?
We used to have No Handlebars by the Flobots for me back in the day. Ooh. When Mutt and Merlone were there. I really like that.
Mutt and Merlone? How are you going back to 2007? 2008?
I might be.
Wow, that was when you were with the Providence Journal.
I was at NBC, actually. But yeah.
Jerry Trupiano. Way back.
So we haven't talked to you, Tom E. Curran, since last week. And I guess, just asking everybody, I don't know if you do the grade thing with the draft. I don't know if you guys partake in that. But your overall opinion of all the picks?
I'd give it a B+. Because while I do continue to think a trade down was the way to go, they stuck to what their plan was. They took a home run swing at the top of the draft with Drake May, who may or may not develop the way they hope. But after that, they spent time trying to support him with wide receivers who might not be as boom or bust as the quarterback is, but they should definitely be singles and perhaps doubles. And that's what they need. They can't afford to be taking wide receivers who are non-contributors or any pass catchers. You know, you look at since 2019, the pass catchers the Patriots have selected, whether it be N'Keal Harry or Tyquan Thornton or Dalton Keene or Devin Asiasi, they've gotten nothing out of those picks. And those are all third-round picks or sooner. So draft a quarterback, then bring in players who can support him. When you hear the Jalen Polk, Jacoby Myers comps, Jacoby Myers would have helped last year. And maybe you didn't have to take a quarterback this year had that quarterback been better. But I think you're going to upgrade a quarterback overall with Drake May, even though I still think a trade down. Like, listen to this. Say you traded down with Minnesota. You get the 11th overall pick, the 23rd, and a 2025 first-round pick. You can take J.J. McCarthy. You can take Xavier Leggett. And maybe you can take next year's first-round pick and jump back up and take a tackle like Tyler Guyton. And then you still have 34. So to me, in hindsight, I still think a trade down was the way to go because I think J.J. McCarthy is right now a better quarterback, and I do think that down the road it's going to be tough to comp because these two guys are in different situations. I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be a productive quarterback in the NFL, and May is more of a wild card.
So, Tom, before the draft, one of the big conversations was the roster being ready for a quarterback, blah, blah, blah. Well, now the draft has come and gone. The roster is virtually set. There can be minor changes moving forward. What do you think the plan is for the supposed not ready to play right away Drake May? You think the plan is to midway through the season, he can win the job in week one? What do you think the sort of loose framework is we're working with here?
I think the default is he's going to sit. I really believe that. You know, just indicated by the fact that Jerod Mayo first stated, you know, best player will play and then circled back on draft night to kind of put that toothpaste back in the tube and say that Jacoby's a starter. I think that was an indication of that's where the mindset is of the team. What's interesting to me is this comparable to 2021? Because Mac Jones played so well at that training camp, he was undeniable. Mm-hmm. And Cam Newton didn't have a bad camp. That was the interesting thing. But Mac Jones' camp was so good, and he was out there every day, and he was so proficient and so much better than Cam Newton in terms of accuracy, speed getting rid of the ball, ability to rebound after bad practices, his sessions against the Giants where he totally outplayed Daniel Jones, who a year later got a huge contract. I think all of those things made it impossible to ignore Mac Jones. Now, I don't think Jacoby Brissett is going to be as easy to beat out as Cam Newton because he's a better thrower. And I think that might keep Drake May, you know, on the sidelines. But what happens if he is that much better than Jacoby? Do you put him out there behind that offensive line that you have question marks? If all five starters are out there and Okorafor can play on the left side, okay. But he has to prove that. I would not want that kid back there with a footwork renovation ongoing and then seeing a blitzkrieg every week, because that's what really sent last year south for Mac Jones, is he had no protection. If you have a stationary quarterback with a below average arm and no protection, he's going to start worrying about the rush, which is what he did.
So we're talking to Tommy Koenig, and Tom, I was last week when we were out in Detroit, I ran into a couple of friends of mine, and then talked to a couple guys who were, you know, scouts for some teams, and the general consensus, and I'm curious to know your opinion on this, you know, just discussing all the different options at quarterback, the one of my friends said it's irrelevant who they pick. He says, quote, "I actually worry about whoever goes to the Pats based on Alex Van Pelt, TJ McCartney's ability to develop a young quarterback." Do you agree with that? Are you worried about that also?
Yeah, I think it has to be monitored all the way through camp. Absolutely. Because everything's unproven. I mean, I think what Alex Van Pelt and the Cleveland Browns did last year with five different quarterbacks and still being a team that was as capable as it was, even though it was propelled by defense, it does speak to an offensive coordinator who is pretty good at his job in developing and tweaking things. But you had a head coach in Stefanski who's an offensive-minded head coach. So I'm sure there were multiple hands there. The McAdoo, Van Pelt, McCartney, Troika should be able to, you know, develop the quarterback. There's three guys there, and as Mayo pointed out, there's 17 coaches, new coaches this year. So there's a lot more manpower there. But until it's proven, it's unproven. And you've just picked the biggest, most promising mold of clay in the draft, but now you have to mold it. So how well do they do? You should absolutely. It does incur scrutiny. It deserves it.
So they draft two receivers. They signed a receiver in KJ Osborne, who apparently is impressing early in the process here. What's your view of what the wide receiver depth chart could look like and who the odd men out could be?
It's interesting because right now we're looking at the highlights of Polk and Baker and saying, wow, look at this. Look at that catch. Wow, look at that. Wow, look at after that catch. And we could do the same thing with Kayshon Boutte last year. And he ended up in mothballs all season. But he had a good camp. He was out there every day. He made acrobatic and great body control catches. He was dependable. And he had great highlights. And that felt like a steal. Now, we don't even know if he's going to be back on the team because of his off-field issues. You know, Tyquan Thornton, again, he is not completely irretrievably horrendous. We saw it, Andy.
So you got that going for you.
I was going to say, he is not completely, totally crappy, unsavable.
Well, I think people would believe that Tyquan Thornton's doomed. And Andy, you and I both watched him in 2022
yep.
in training camp. He wasn't a one-speed Bethel Johnson guy. He could change gears.
Yep.
He could set things up. He's just too brittle.
Yep.
So can he be, and he has added bulk, it seems, from, you know, shirtless pictures sent out, that he might be able to. So I wouldn't bail on him. I think Juju's on borrowed time. But I don't know what the wide receiver room will look like until we kind of see what their initial, you know, designs are on how they'll use Polk and Baker out of the chutes. I mean, they're young guys. So everyone looks good right now. But, again, to go back to the tight ends, I remember Phil and I looking at Keenan Asiasi and presuming that they would be, you know, I said, okay, 44 catches for Keen, 41 for Asiasi. I don't know if either of them had four
nope.
in their careers.
Nope.
Yeah, combined. that was – and both those guys were fourth-round picks, weren't they?
I believe so.
Third.
Third? Maybe holy third. Cow.
Swing and a miss.
Eight picks, seven of the eight are offense. But finally, good news on the defensive front. Barmore re-signs, like one of the biggest contracts in a long period of time for the Patriots. Just your, what does that mean for him, like as far as like, you know, his importance to the defense?
I think he and Gonzalez are the cornerstones of the defense, and they should be good for a long time. So to me, you've now got Gonzalez still under control for ostensibly four more years because you have this fifth-year option you can pick up, and you have one of the, I would say, a top 10 defensive tackle in the NFL in Barmore. You're going to have to look at edge a little bit with Judon getting older. I think Anthony Jennings, you know, Keon White, these guys are all outstanding. I thought Jennings was remarkable last year in his improvement. Uche continues to be a situational guy, but I look at Edge as someplace they still have to address, you know, for the future. But to me, you have a cornerstone defensive tackle and a cornerstone corner. So I think that's really good for the defense in a period of time where they didn't do really anything on defense in free agency, really, and definitely in the draft.
Now that the draft is over, undrafted, where do you sort of – you mentioned a little bit of it earlier. I don't know if you can find a tackle at this point, but are there holes? Because Robert Kraft at the owners' meetings talked about post-draft opportunities to add to the roster and improve the talent. Where should they be targeting, and do you think it's realistic to really get anything at this point that could affect the roster?
Yeah, I think edge. I would continue to look at that, and I would continue to look at corner. I believe Stephon Gilmore is still available, right?
I believe so, yes. I like that idea. You were first on that. I like that idea.
I think Stephon Gilmore would make sense. Does he want to come to a rebuilding team at this juncture?
How
much?
You take the veteran lap is what it's called.
The what? The veteran what?
You're taking the lap once more around the track. Yeah, okay. It's like, you know, he's won a championship. He's been paid a lot of money. And now it's all about how many more years can I add so I get that severance pay? Ooh, that's good.
It's the Kyle portion of the program.
Yeah, and what a better place for him than here. I mean, geez, they probably would love him to be here.
Yeah, so to me, that would be a smart place to look at. You know, short up with Stephon Gilmore on the other side. And, you know, he had some very good games. You know, I think that there are games there, too, where he was with Dallas last year where he got lit up. But he also had some very good games with Dallas down the stretch, too. So I would look at that as a position where you can say, okay, there's still places you can add.
Have you heard anything about this, last week on the Pat McAfee show, Roger Goodell talking about, like, you know, the 3-day weekend for the Super Bowl? Obviously Goodell speaks for the owners. Have you heard anything about what the Crafts want to do with this? Is this something that they're pushing for?
Yeah, that's longstanding that they have wanted to get it so that it coincides with President's Day, I believe.
Yeah.
Push it back. That's
love
why
it.
Conversation was of adding two more. You know, we're not going to 17, going to 18. That was a part of that conversation, I think, when they were expanding the schedule. So that is their desire to eventually get, I think, to President's Day, so that we're going into late February with the NFL season. So mid-July to late February. Dominate, dominate, dominate.
So I'm wondering if the coaches feel like their job is becoming harder based on the fact that they're not going to have preseason games, or maybe they just kind of, you know, work on the whole, you know, inter-squad meetings or practices with, you know, joint practices with other teams. Maybe that's just how they get their work more controlled.
Yeah, I mean, and it changes the product. We've talked about it ad infinitum, I think, with offensive line people who talk about the lack of development because offensive linemen don't hit as much in the preseason and they just don't have the same timing and their entire season has been delayed in terms of when they get to game readiness. And you can speak to this too, as somebody who was in double sessions for a good portion of your career, how much that impacts how much you can teach, whether or not, you know, guys are out able to actually put hands on each other and drive each other around. It doesn't really happen until what now? The second week of training camp, Andy?
Yep.
Because you still have to have that ramp up time at the beginning of camp. So they're not hitting, and really when you look at the league itself, it's turning – the interesting thing is their desire was to protect a little bit more and spend less time banging heads together, but now we have defensive ends who are 6'5", 280, and run 4.4s coming off the edge on offensive linemen who aren't ready to go and demolishing quarterbacks. And the game has just evolved. It's like, what do they call that? An unintended consequence?
Yeah. Hey, listen, I know we got to let you go real quick. Sorry, Andy, but because we do got to talk. I am a hockey insider, so I have some hockey breaking news.
Oh.
I got to get to after trending. I don't want to give it away yet. Real quickly, though, do you know who Mike Gittings is? You ever heard that name, Tom?
I have not. Should I Google it?
No. It's there's something that we're going to do at around 1:25. I just realized that there's this father and son duo that have created like a chart, and it's proprietary to them that NFL teams use to indicate whether a guy is going to help them right away, can win on their own, or needs help around. They use two different colors. They use blue and red. And blue would be a Brady, Manning, Mahomes. A red would be like a Kirk Cousins or a Jimmy G. We're going to break that down at around 125. I'm wondering if you actually ever heard of anything like this, because I don't think the general public knows about it.
No, I haven't. And it'd be interesting to hear what the results are, because I think that, is it just relative to quarterbacks, or is it
relative to every position, every single position? But so before you even come out of the draft or while you're playing, even as a free agent, this father and son duo create their own chart, and they list each position, and they determine which one has the highest success rate for helping their team, which is the most difficult positions to translate into pro football, and which is one is the easiest. I thought it was interesting. So if you tune in at 125, we'll break it down for you.
Well, of course I will.
There you go. You're a P1. You're a P1. Hopefully I won't fumble it. All right, Tom, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Hey, who starts in net for the Bruins tonight?
Pardon me?
Who starts in net for the Bruins tonight?
Who was first off the ice?
I don't know. I just know who started.
But it's got to be Swayman either way.